everyone. My name is Belinda Granger, and I'm the professional liaison for Challenge Family. I'm also known throughout the triathlon world as being a bit of a mother hen to the pro athletes. Of course, given the current circumstances, I've been thinking about the athletes a lot lately. So we came up with the idea of Coffee Calls with Belinda, which basically gives me and you an opportunity to check in with them all and see how they're all going. So welcome to the official Challenge Family podcast. I think it's time for a coffee. Okay, welcome back to Coffee with Belinda. I am here today, I was going to say this morning, but it's actually this afternoon for myself. It's this morning for my young guest. He's a relatively unknown professional triathlete, but I have a sneaky suspicion that there are big things to come from this young man. Welcome, Kieran Lindis from Great Britain. Now, listen, Kieran, what time is it over there in GB right now?
So it's currently 20 past eight.
Okay. So it's nice and early in the morning because obviously this is a coffee with Belinda, but it's now 5:22 in the afternoon for me. And I'll be honest, I don't have a cup of coffee by my side. I have a glass of red wine, but I've been told that, you know, as long as it's past five, totally allowed. So I hope you don't mind that while we do this podcast, I will be drinking a glass of red wine. I hope that's okay.
Yeah, that's, of course, that's fine. I mean, some people might frown upon that with the coffee, but you can't have a coffee before you go to bed. Otherwise, you'll be up all night.
This is true. This is true. And that's what I say. I always say that my glass of red wine every night is for medicinal purposes only. Helps me sleep. I'm sure there are doctors out there that could counter that, but that's okay. I'm going with that for now.
You could always go for the decaf coffee, but if you're not getting the caffeine kick, I don't think there's much point in it.
No, see that you're speaking my language. I mean, I've never understood decaf coffee. That's like me drinking. It's like when I go to Germany with the alcohol-free beer, you know, the Erdinger beer. I've never understood it. So I'm sorry to all the Germans out there sponsored by Erdinger, but I've never understood alcohol-free beer and I've never understood decaf coffee. So let's get that straight right now. Now, listen, Kieran, 23 years of age, a young gun, a young pup, so to speak, in the sport of long-distance triathlon, obviously not a young pup when it comes to short course and Olympic distance triathlon. You've said that you've been in the sport of tri now for around 9 to 10 years. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
And who got you into the sport to begin with?
So it's a bit of an interesting story. I mean, when I was coming up through the sport, I would say that it was still at that point relatively unknown, or it wasn't too big in this country. So when I was younger, my first kind of input into the sport was my mum used to always run cross country for school. So as any sort of young kid kind of looking up to their parents, I started doing cross country, and it was only for school and only kind of, you know, just competing for the fun of it. And I went to a cross country race and I just turned up and did well. And I got kind of almost scouted by the local athletics clubs to start running with them. And at kind of a similar time to that, I was also learning to swim, just, you know, learning to swim as any child would, because my mum had always kind of had a phobia of water, and especially open water. So she wanted to make sure that
that you didn't.
That we didn't. And I think the swimming's always got a bit of a funny reputation because, I was learning to swim and I got, again, kind of scouted into a swimming club, a competitive swimming club.
So what age were you when that happened?
So the swimming club, I must have been around 8-9 years old.
Right.
When I started getting into really competitive swimming, I kind of got picked up into the club a little bit earlier than that, but that was kind of still coming up their development ranks of a swimming club. So I was learning to swim, and then I was also kind of learning to swim competitively in the swimming club.
Wow. The reason this fascinates me, because obviously coming from Australia, swimming is one of our biggest sports. It's something that we've been very, very good at forever on a world, on a world platform. But normally our really good swimmers started from when they were, you know, they basically could swim before they could walk. And so 8 or 9 years of age over here isn't particularly young. And for a swimmer of your caliber, I'm quite surprised. I mean, you obviously are a natural when it comes to swimming.
Well, it's I was swimming from I've always been in the water, but I didn't really take swimming competitively as almost an importance until around that age. That's when I started to get into more of the competing side of it. I'd always been swimming slightly younger than that and been around the water. But I think the reason that it was so helpful for me was that when, because you can swim quite a lot when you're young, it gave a really good foundation to the other sports that you might not necessarily have great fitness in because you can't do the kind of impact. So I think that's why there's a big shift at the moment with our athletes, is that we're finding that quite a lot of our triathletes are kind of winning the cross country competitions and the athletics competitions, especially
Interesting.
with the likes of like Alex Yee and people like that. And it's funny because a lot of my running friends now, they're doing more cross training. So one of my friends that I used to run with, he's doing a lot of cycling now to kind of aid his running. And I think from that younger perspective, when you can swim because it's non-impact, they a lot of people are finding that the swimmers kind of get a good base fitness when they're younger, which actually helps aid them in all the other sports that you can't necessarily train for lots when you're young.
No, I completely agree. And speaking of Alex Yee, I actually got to watch him for the first time ever, watch him actually race in Mooloolaba. Not no, actually, it was actually the last triathlon event that I attended back in March. And he was incredible. He had a bit of a mishap on the bike where he crashed, but to watch him run was truly incredible. He is without a doubt one of the most incredible runners in triathlon. I'd heard about it before, but obviously I'd never got to see him run in the flesh, and just to see it was something else. He's incredible.
Yeah, he's incredible, and kind of the best thing with him. I mean, I came up the national federation with him as part of the programs that we had. So he was the younger year than me, but he was still in that same kind of age when I was coming through up the ITU system. And the funny thing with him is whenever we were doing easy runs or anything like that, he was always the person kind of at the back.
Wow.
When everyone was, and when we all had two big egos racing, I think
Yes, 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 yes.
when you watch him, he's phenomenal. But I think what people don't see is you know what's going on with his head and his ability to kind of you know work out what he needs in each training session and executing it properly. And he had that from a very, very young age,
Yeah, that's
which is very rare to see.
very rare. I mean, particularly at that age, it's so hard. I mean, as you said, egos get in the way, and there's nothing wrong with that, and just competitive spirit. And it's so funny because I still look at him. I actually introduced myself to him. He looks so young still. I look at him, and he looks like he's 16. I had to actually ask someone, "How old is he?" Because he looks like he's still 16 years of age. It's incredible.
Yeah, he's definitely one to watch for the future because I mean people do underestimate actually how young he is. I mean people say that I'm young and he's younger than me.
So how old he's a couple a year or two younger than you?
Yeah, he's a year or
Yeah.
two younger than me,
Yeah.
and I also had the pleasure of kind of coming up because he was also a London region, so I was right next to him even from the kind of very foundation level races as well. So I've known him for quite a long time.
So, Kieran, how many years did you actually spend in the, obviously in short course or Olympic distance triathlon before you decided to switch across to the longer distance, the middle distance?
So with the short course, so I started kind of racing. So we, the country, at least when I was growing up, was kind of divided into you had the regional kind of racing, and then you had our national racing. And usually you had to go through your regional academy or do well in the regional circuit. And a lot of that was all non-drafting. And again, I was doing that purely for fun. Funnily enough, I got into triathlon to do cross training for my running and swimming, which I was doing at the time. So triathlon was kind of never really a main goal. And I raced against one of my good friends, and I found out after the race that he was part of the regional academy and was racing to quite a good level in the national academy. And I then got selected to be a part of the regional academy to race the draft legal activities, and I started draft legal racing in 2012, and I did that to 2019, which then I then switched to do Challenge Elmia, which was the first non-draft kind of long course race I'd done.
Hold on a second. Okay, now I did not, I knew that you were only new to long distance triathlon, so that part I knew. I did not realize that Challenge Elmia, which is a full distance triathlon, was your very first race outside of short course. Is that what you're telling me? Oh my gosh. You're crazy.
So the way that I got into that race was that some people are probably aware that the Challenge Elmia is ITU and Challenge, they kind of joined for their European championships. And I could get into that racing with essentially without really any long course experience. It was, if you'd done ETU Cups or World Cups or European champs in the past, you could qualify for that race. And I was having quite a rough time in the early 2019 season. I'd kind of got myself into really good fitness, but I was just kind of getting a bit beaten up in the events and just not really getting the results that I felt like I was in the form for. And I would say that into the middle of the season, I was kind of getting quite down, and I really wanted a change. And I'd always looked at the long course racing as something that I wanted to do. Especially at least when I was getting into triathlon, it was always really impressive if you could say that you'd done a full distance triathlon. And so I made kind of a rash decision to race long course. And the funny story is that originally I thought it was a half.
Oh no!
Just a slight difference, Kieran. Yeah. Well, the qualification sheet, it had half at the top, and then it just said, long distance triathlon. And at that time, I thought the half was long distance. Yeah. So I just assumed that it was a half because the top was all in half. So it's probably going to make you feel even worse that when I realized it was a full distance triathlon, I had 10 weeks to prepare from it for my ITU training.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, crazy. But you know what? Sometimes not knowing what you're actually getting yourself in for is a good thing. But you know what? You've just made me realize, you've made me feel a lot better by telling me this story, because it was one of the questions I was going to bring up in our conversation today. Was obviously I knew that Challenge Elmia last year was your first full distance race. I did not realize it was your first long distance race of any description. And I wanted to talk about the fact that Dirk Bockel and I, who were doing the live commentary at the time, had never heard of you. We could see that there was a young boy leading the swim. We got the number on, we found out what race number you were. We found out your name. We both looked at each other and shrugged shoulders. We had no idea who you were. We then had to call on our mastermind, Torsten Radder. Thank gosh, hallelujah for Torsten Radder, because he gets me out of trouble every time. And who was able to then look you up, get some stats. And we finally, I think about maybe about 10 kilometres into the bike, we finally found out who you were. But now that you've told me this story, I don't feel so bad about it anymore, because you actually hadn't done any long distance racing. So that's making me feel much better. So thank you for that.
Yeah, no, it's I didn't expect it, and to be honest, I'm not going to lie, it wasn't the situation that I was expecting.
No. Did you talking about that race, I mean, obviously you know you're a strong swimmer, and particularly coming from a short course background, often you find when you do make the move up to long distance racing, you are always going to be at the very least in the front pack, if not leading. So you must have assumed in that race that you would be at least at the pointy end of the field, but did you actually think that you would lead the race for that long? I mean, when were you actually caught on the bike in Elmia?
Well, so I would say that before the race actually started, I mean, it became more of, at the time, it became more of a challenge of, you know, I just really want to try and finish.
Finish, of course.
And that was the big goal more than anything, was that, despite competing to a level in ITU, it was the it was kind of the goal just to try something new and something to really strive for. And at the time, I knew that in terms of the distance change, the swim wasn't really ever a thing that I worried about, because, you know, and quite comfortably do 5K sets and things like that. So that was never a worry to me. It was always the bike and the run that was the worry.
Yeah.
So I kind of developed this, especially in training at least, I kind of developed a thought pattern of, well, if I can maintain swimming without kicking, I can kind of train the other two to be to kind of bring them up and just kind of maintain the swim. And I knew from the previous results that to hold that front end swim, I'd have to hold kind of around 73, 74 pace. So I kind of worked my ability around kind of swimming that pace as relaxed as possible. And the funny thing about Almere was that I went off, and I have a breathing pattern where I breathe 20 to my left side and 20 to my right side.
Okay.
And then to change over, I breathe every three, just to change the sides. And the only reason I do that is because it was when I was joining a different swimming club. I did it to just avoid injuries. It wasn't really a tactical decision or anything. Right, it's just something that I picked up to keep the sides balanced. And I was breathing 20 to my right, and everyone was there, and the pace was actually quite on. And I kind of was thinking, oh, it's not going to be that 72 pace. It's going to be faster. It's going to be, you know, I might not be able to hang on. And then I switched to my other side, and then when I come back to switch to the other side, I was then clear, and
no,
I was actually
around.
Really surprised. Yeah, that I was, and I think everyone had gone really fast for literally the first 20 strokes, and then I was on my own. So then the kind of the train of thought then was to try and swim as fast as I could without kicking.
Right.
And then that was kind of the game plan from that point. And in terms of when people caught me, I believe I was clear for probably about the first hour of the bike. And that was a bit overwhelming because I had loads of bikes around me, and at first
exactly.
I thought it was because I'd done at first
media.
I thought it was because I'd gone the wrong way, or if I'd done something wrong, because I'd heard that at least coming from the ITU background, the rules are very, very, very strict. So I was unsure if I'd have dropped a gel or something, and it would have been, I don't know. Do you know what I mean? I thought I'd done something wrong, or
and there was
one point in the video where I do a really big wobble on the bike, and that's because what you hadn't seen is all the bikes suddenly race up behind me, and then all stop all of a sudden. So I was kind of looking behind, going, "What's going on?
What have I done?
And I actually nearly crashed because
no.
of it."
And had you done any research leading into that race? So obviously your first time in a non-drafting full distance race, which I'm still trying to wrap my head around, by the way, you were 22 then? Or 22 years of age?
Yeah, 22.
At 22 years of age, which is ridiculously young to be doing a full distance race anyway, had you done any research on any of your competitors, or did you decide, forget it, doesn't matter anyway, I'm just going to go in blind and see what happens?
I didn't know anything about anyone, and it was, and I had that on kind of, I knew that was what I was going to do, because I it wasn't really about anyone else, and I knew people by name. So, you know, I knew that in the previous years Joe Skipper had done it, and I know about Matt and
Freddie Troutman.
But it's kind of that I didn't really know what any of those numbers or times meant. So even if I did know that, oh, they're a good runner because they can hold, I don't know, say 330, 340 kilometer pace, I don't know what that means or feels
means,
like, because
I didn't
race it.
Of course.
and ITU, because you race above that pace, I know obviously it's a lot shorter, but because you race above that pace, kind of every pace doesn't doesn't look that bad until you actually try it.
True, that is so true. And you know what you're saying now reminds me so much of Chrissy Wellington when she lined up for her very first long distance race, which was Ironman Korea. And she was only told, I think, 2 or 3 weeks beforehand that she would be doing that. And she was only doing short course before then. And then turning up in Kona later that year, she had zero idea of her competition. This is legit. I mean, I trained with her, so I know. She had no idea of her competition, apart from the girls that she trained with in her squad. And she had zero idea of what she was actually capable of running, you know, split paces. So what you're saying is exactly like Chrissy Wellington was back in the day. So it's actually a really refreshing way to go into a race, because you don't have that stress of thinking, I've got to stick to this heart rate, I've got to stick to this pace, I've got to watch for this competitor, because it's irrelevant, because you don't know anything about any. So I'm not telling everyone to do it, but it's actually quite a refreshing way to go into your first long distance race, don't you think?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I'm very fortunate at the time when I was training that I was with Team Bodyworks, which is a triathlon club in Eastbourne, and the coaches there have done it, and to a very high level as well.
Yeah.
So I had a lot of support going into it, and
which is great.
But it was never about what others could do, because, you know, at the time the goal was to finish, and funnily enough, it was never the biggest shock to me was actually the electrolyte problem that I had towards the end of the run. That was the biggest kind of challenge of the whole day.
Well, you're not alone there, Kieran. I mean, I know some of the best professional athletes in the world still struggle with that issue. I think it's one of those things that to get it absolutely spot on, particularly when you're talking about the last 4 to 5 kilometres or even 6 to 8 kilometres of the marathon, it's a tough thing. And, I mean, there are some professional athletes that never really get it right. I was talking to Sarah Crowley only the other night, and we were talking about Kona last year, you know, and she had that great ding-dong with Lucy Charles, and she said at the end of the day, what cost her is she just didn't get enough gels in at a crucial point of the race, which was probably only with about 6 to 8K to go. She skipped a gel, she skipped an 8, not that she skipped an 8, she just didn't give it enough credit, so she didn't take enough, and it cost her second place. So, you know, that's something that professional athletes to this day are still trying to perfect.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things I love about the long course racing, which is different to the ITU, is the ITU is very much a kind of in the moment race. You kind of are there at the front, or you're not, or you're there on the feet, or you're not, or you've made the pack, or you haven't.
And
one of the things that can make you quite a fierce athlete short course is just your ability to almost throw everything out the window and commit 100%. But one of the things I love with the long course is everything has to be planned out to such a fine level, and it's actually sometimes it's really difficult to kind of almost say, do you know what, that's actually too much at this point, or that's not enough, or and then the very, very fine calculations that you make will make a massive difference
at the end of the
towards
day.
The end.
Yes, absolutely.
And it takes a strong person to really work out that. And I've watched reports of people that saying that, you know, I purposely didn't do that because I knew it would affect me then. And that's kind of the level of performance that I kind of aspire to reach or match, is not only physically putting yourself out, but actually, you know, making sure that the mental side's kind of ticking along as well, and really trying to perform that way.
Well, I mean, at 23 years of age, for you to be already thinking like this, I think you're ahead of the game to begin with. I mean, you're wise beyond your years. And it's something that, as I said, some professional athletes never give enough credit or enough time to. And even when I remember back in the day, and we're going back now, Kieran, I mean, I'm old enough to be your mum, back in the day, you know, even I look back now and I don't think I actually even gave it enough time and effort, just sitting down on that mental side of things. And like you said, planning everything and to perfection. And I mean, okay, I don't know if there is such a thing as a perfect race. I mean, with such a long amount of time that you're out there, can you be out there for 8-9 hours and have the perfect race? I just don't know if that exists. But it's about minimizing the errors. And I don't think I ever gave it enough credit. Back then, there wasn't as much research around either. But if you're already thinking along these lines now, I'd say that you're definitely on the right track. And I think long courses are definitely going to suit you. So
yeah, and I think what you're saying there is very, very important, where you said about, you know, you have your downs and it's about how you can kind of come back from that.
Mm.
And I think that's, you know, whatever level you are, if is that, you know, everyone can go well when they're going well, but when they're, you know, when things go wrong, and, you know, how do you deal with that? And I think that's one of the things I love about the long course aspect, is that when the guys caught me on the bike, I was kind of a bit all over the place, and they wanted to come past, and, you know, they were saying, oh, we're behind you, or I hadn't realized. And it was, you know, don't worry about it, great swim. And it was just kind of, that was nice to have, that, you know, you'd kind of done something wrong, but everyone was kind of, you know, don't worry about it.
Yeah,
you know, we're all in this together. And and I think that's another thing as well with the long course aspect, is because it's so hard just to finish. I remember sitting down with someone saying that they were like, oh, you know, you did really well, you did a really fast time. And I was like, yeah, but you were out on course for, you know, 14 15 16 hours. You know, yep. I was going at my best aerobic performance for however long, and you were going your best aerobic performance for however long, when you were out there. Yeah. You know, and I don't understand how someone can be out performing at that high level for that amount of time.
Exactly. It's pretty impressive. Yeah. You know, long course racing, even now, I mean, obviously I haven't raced for 5 or 6 years, but I'm still involved, and nothing makes me happier than to be out there watching races and watching them unfold. And I am still learning. I mean, I've been in the sport for 25, 26 years now, and I am still learning things about full distance racing. It's incredible.
Yeah, and I think, and like you said about perfection, and I don't think you'll ever really have the perfect race, or you can only ever try and come near to perfection, because things will go wrong. And that's the beauty of it. It's
exactly.
Nice to see, you know, it's really motivating to see someone really in the hurt locker and still going for it. And I think another thing that's beautiful with triathlon is, because we do three sports, we're never the best in the one discipline. And I think when you see, you know, the Brownlees or Cameron Worth or people like that that are going and training with, you know, the best of the individual sports, you know, we can always learn off them. And I quite like the fact that, you know, you can be the best in, say, the triathlon, but you'll never be the best in the individual discipline.
No.
Or it might be difficult to do if you are in triathlon. And I always kind of like the fact that you can learn so much off of other people. I love the fact that, like, if I wanted to, you know, work on my swimming or work on my running, I could go with pure runners and swimmers and cyclists and learn so much more off of them.
No, that's exactly right. And I think that's, you know, obviously I spoke to Cam not long ago, and he's been in professional cycling for quite some time, but then crossed over to triathlon. He's one of those superhumans. And now to be able to go back, you know, riding, I'd say, you know, close to full time in the pro cycling ranks, but still able to do triathlon. I'm itching to see just how he's going to fare in triathlon, particularly next year, because obviously his goal right now, his focus is on cycling. And so it will be interesting to see. Just, I know he's still definitely swimming and running, there's no doubt about that, but it's limited. So it's going to be very interesting to see how he actually fares next year when we get a full year of racing again, I hope, to see how he actually goes.
Yeah, and it is very, very exciting. And I always love listening to how people approach their training and how they approach triathlon in general, because I came where I was, there wasn't a triathlon club local to the area. So I swam with individual, so I swam with an individual club. I rode with an individual club and I ran with an individual club. And I was always trying to find out what people were doing. And it always fascinates me when someone does something really kind of almost perceived as bizarre.
Against the grain, really, that's right. Exactly.
Yeah, against the grain. And then, but then they become almost kind of a forward thinker of how mm-hmm. you should do things. And I'm a bit obsessed with all of that stuff because I would like to become a coach and maybe one day have my own club around me, which is why I love learning and about these things and trying to find out as much as I can with people that I get the pleasure of meeting.
And let's be honest, Kieran, I mean, triathlon, when you're looking at other sports, it's still a reasonably new sport. I mean, we're still learning and evolving. So I don't think anyone's as yet perfected the sport of triathlon. I mean, obviously it's come a hell of a long way since it started, but I definitely think that we are still learning and thinking outside of the box, so to speak. And that's why I think when you've got people like Cam Wirth coming from another sport, going back to it again, I'm fascinated just like you to see if it's going to work, if he's going to come back bigger and better, or if it's going to take him back a couple of steps. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see. And, you know, there's other athletes the same. I mean, obviously at the moment, Jan Frodeno is the top dog. He almost seems invincible. I mean, no one is invincible, we know that. But whatever he's doing, he just always seems to do to perfection. And for me personally, as an athlete, he seems to be the most precise. And he doesn't tell a lot of people much about his training. I mean, I know we have social media now and most of us know what people are doing, but he seems to keep his cards close to him. And we get little glimpses every now and again. I know we had the full distance triathlon he did the other weekend, which was amazing. I'm sure you watched some of it, which was very, very cool. And he raised a lot of money, which was also incredibly amazing. But we don't really know too much about what he does, but you have to admit he seems to be the athlete that we could probably look at and say, you know what, you've perfected it more than anyone else for now.
Yeah, I think in terms of him giving away his training, I was listening to I can't remember what it was, but it was a video, I think, of just doing a brief training, and he said that he likes to it almost to be a big reveal on race day of kind of, it's a surprise. It's
a surprise to everyone. Yeah.
And I think when you look at what he's done with, I mean, even little subtle details with the bike position and things like that, you can see the level of thought that's gone into it. And it would be fascinating to actually find out what he does. I think the funny thing with that is whenever you have someone of doing really, really well following a certain program, the first thought is, well, maybe that program works. But the second thought is, well, if they'd have done that, then how would have that affected their race? And if maybe that program's better, but they're just, I don't know, maybe mentally stronger so that it's worked for them. He's kind of fascinating to follow, and I think, again, when talking about what we said earlier with the, I think whenever I watch him, he almost looks like he's almost in a state of calm, and you can just almost see the thought process going on in his mind, and it looks very calculated and very precise, and I think if you're willing to go to that sort of level of detail, that, you know, the results will come, because you don't leave a stone unturned.
No, absolutely. And I mean, obviously there are different personalities in our sport, and what suits one doesn't necessarily suit the other. And that doesn't mean that you can't be a champion. But for me personally, Jan Frodeno epitomises as close to perfection as you can get for now. So, and as I said, there's many ways to skin a cat. But, yeah, he definitely has perfected the art. Now, talking about triathletes around the world, obviously – triathlon culture in Great Britain. I mean, you, as a, I won't say a country, as a Great Britain in as a whole, have produced some of the world's best triathletes over the years. I mean, you've got Ali and Johnny Brownlee, Lucy Charles, Chrissy Wellington, Julie Dibben, Simon Lessing, Spencer Smith, Tim Don, Helen Jenkins, oh my gosh, the list. And now, you know, in short course, Vicky Holland, Jessica Learmonth, Alex, as we were just talking about. I mean, the list is, it's virtually endless. And you've got some great athletes coming through. Simone Mitchell is a new up and coming, won Ironman Wales last year, and which was so incredible to see. Obviously, Laura Siddle, who you know. You just keep producing amazing athletes, and not just over one particular distance. It's over the whole field, short and long distance. So can you give me a little bit of insight into the triathlon culture in Great Britain? Because let's be honest, you don't really have the weather. To me, you don't have the weather to produce great triathletes. In Australia, you know, we have great triathletes. It's obvious. I mean, we're summer almost 24/7, all year round. We have great pools. We have great beaches. You can understand why we produce good triathletes in Australia. But over the last few years, you guys have been crushing us. So what is it? I want to know what the secret is.
Well, I think funny you say that because about the weather, because a lot of countries and a lot of my friends abroad were saying, you know, how it's so unfair that that they can no longer go outside, and unfair, but it's
you just know, a shitty situation for everyone. Yeah. I totally understand.
And but it's funny because, you know, me and I would say quite a lot of the other Brits. So over the period of February, January, and December, we were all indoors anyway. So
anyway,
it wasn't really
it wasn't really
a problem for us. It's kind of like, same old, really. I don't know really. I think when I was definitely in kind of 2010, 2011, I would say that not many people actually knew what triathlon was. It really took the Brownlees and Tim Don and you know, all of those kind of first batch of almost superhumans from the UK, and it took kind of the 2012 Olympics for it to be really recognised
as a legit sport.
For what it was, or not even to be recognised, but no one really knew what it was. It's kind of this thing that people knew about. The long course aspect to an extent, but it was only kind of like, oh wow, they've done that, what a good challenge. It was never, I remember going to school and saying, you know, this is what I do, and people didn't understand what it was, or kind of was like, why are you doing that, or why don't you just do one of the sports, especially as, I mean, most people would consider the three kind of almost the worst concoction of but it's not even that, it's just the you know, the choice of sports. It's like, why can't you just pick some more fun things?
Kieran, it really fascinates me because we have triathlon in school. So throughout Australia, not throughout all of Australia, but I know particularly in Queensland, in Victoria, New South Wales, it is part of our school curriculum. Triathlon is a legitimate sport and it's part of the curriculum. So we have triathletes starting as young as, you know, in primary school. And yet you guys, as you say, I'm sure you don't have it as part of your school curriculum, yet you are producing the best triathletes in the world.
No, it's definitely not part of our curriculum. Definitely not. I mean, we struggle really to get almost the swimming not many schools have pools. So, you know, if you do have a pool at your school, it's a luxury. But I don't know what makes us, I think, potentially, I think for a lot of people, I mean, the UK is in, you know, quite a nice an economic state, and it's I think the biggest thing with it is it's just a challenge. I think over the time, I think, you know, with parents and that kind of once you've done a marathon, it's kind of what can I do next? What's the next challenge? And then I think the triathlon is the challenge. And I think a lot of people have their parents who've gone through it, and then the children are getting into it. And as soon as the country got, so how our funding works for the sport is typically it's you get it from the lottery funding where there's just a big lottery, and then the kind of almost the profit goes towards certain aspects of the country. And one of the ways that you get that is from Olympic success and then your participation records. So because we did well at the Olympics and Rio, we've managed to get as a sport a reasonable amount of funding, and because good there's funding, such a good participation, it's then gone. It's got, and it's not amazing funding compared to some of our biggest, kind of not our biggest sports, but some of the biggest sports.
More popular sports, yeah, I know what you mean.
But but I think it's just the appeal, and I think the reason why we're doing so well is, for a long time, at least through the 2000s and probably all the way up to about 2016, and still now, is that because there wasn't a lot of funding and because it was almost a niche area, everyone involved in it just had so much passion.
Yeah, and gave 100%.
And because they were doing it for free or for voluntary, and I think that's one of the things that's sometimes overlooked with it, is that because there wasn't a lot of funding in it and because it wasn't well known, the people that are actually in the places are doing it for the love, and it's almost as it gets bigger, it's trying to hold on to that kind of purity that we've had in the country. And I'd probably say that that's why the country succeeds in it.
That actually makes a lot of sense, Kieran. I mean, there's no doubt. I even know, if you're looking just at myself, I was a age group triathlete before I was a professional triathlete, and I got into triathlon because it looked fun, and then it was sheer love, and now it's become a way of life for me, and I have just as much passion for the sport now as I did when I first started. And I think you've hit the nail on the head, because you are always going to give your very best, whatever area you're in the sport. If you love it 100%, then you're always going to give 100%. So it makes a lot of sense. But it's still, I mean, when I was thinking of some of the questions to ask you earlier today, and I started going through with my husband some of the legends, you know, the champions. I mean, we got those names in less than 3 seconds. It's just, and I'm sure I've left out many. I mean, we've got Michelle Dillon, Stewie Hayes. The list is virtually endless. And Andrew Johns back in the day, who I used to train with, and these athletes were and are today the best in the world, and it still baffles me, because on paper you shouldn't be, because you're just in an area where, you know, you don't have, like you said, you don't have a lot of summer, you don't have a lot of outdoors time, but yeah, you're dead right. I think you've hit the nail on the head with that.
Yeah, and I think that's maybe one of the things, because it you know, in the over winter and the weather and things like that, because it
you guys
is
are just hard. Not, that's what it not is. Ideal. You're hard.
Well, that and also the ones that are doing it are kind of doing it above, you know, a point where if the weather's bad and you're still going out on the bike, you know, you're actually quite committed to exactly. doing that. Whereas when it is a nice weather and everyone's out, it's a lot easier to do that. So maybe that's
so
one
true.
Reason why.
So true. Let me let you in on a little secret. I know I knew when I was coming towards the end of my career, because if I got up in the morning at 5:30 or 6 o'clock in the morning and there were wet roads, so not necessarily raining, Kieran, just wet roads, it was like, no, can't ride wet roads. Sorry, cannot ride. So, you know, there's a little bit of a difference there, Rezi. I'm sure you are well and truly used to riding on wet roads. It's not even something you'd contemplate.
Yeah,
it's just a done deal.
It's just a... And if it's not wet roads, it'll be a flooded road, and you ride yes. through, and it waters up to your knees, and it's quite a good stability practice, to be honest.
Oh, that's funny. That's hilarious. Now, listen, obviously, we do need to talk about current times and the craziness that is our world right now. You know, I'm here in Australia in a little town called Noosa, where our restrictions are relatively easy compared to many other countries around the world. In fact, in Noosa, I mean, I work from home anyway, so if I was to be brutally honest, my life really hasn't changed too much. I mean, the biggest thing is that, you know, obviously I can't meet my friends because we're not allowed to be in groups of more than two, and can't go out for dinner. It's just takeaways, takeaway coffee, takeaway food. But tell me a little bit about the restrictions that you have in place right now in the UK, because I spoke to Laura Siddle, who obviously beelined it back to the UK, got there just in time she gave us a little bit of an insight where she is in the UK. Where are you? Where are you actually based right now? And what are the restrictions like for you personally?
So I'm based in Eastbourne, which is on the south coast. It's near Brighton, not too far away from London either. And the restrictions in the UK currently, our lockdown's just been extended. And the lockdown essentially is you try and stay at home as much as you can. If you're going out, it's only really for vital supplies, for food or medicine, things like that. We have been granted one time a day where you can go out and exercise. The rules on that are quite loose, which has caused a bit of confusion in the country. And I'm sure people know what I'm talking about with that if they're in the UK, which is nice. I mean, I think the big way up is some other countries saying, well, why are you allowing people out? And the defence is, well, you know, if you've got to keep people fit, otherwise their immune system's low. And I think because it's such a new thing
for all
in terms
of
we haven't had this. Yeah, we haven't had this. No one really knows the best approach. And it's quite tough for any government or anyone to know what's doing. And that's one of the things that I'm trying to kind of, to some of my friends and that are in the sport that are maybe getting frustrated because events might not be telling, you know, what's happening. But I think the problem that you've got is they don't know exactly. So
that's
like
right.
with Salou, it wasn't challenge saying we're not racing. It was the government saying no, nothing.
Exactly. Exactly.
And it's very tough for and almost for myself at the minute with planning stuff. It's kind of like, well, I can't plan to race because I'm going off the assumption of someone else's assumption that the government is going to allow it to go ahead. And it's one of the things I've tried to kind of look at, as much as I might get annoyed or upset that I can only go out once, it's kind of like, well, at least I can go out once.
That's right. Exactly.
And with that as well, is it's kind of like triathlon is a luxury to do. And you kind of if I'm getting upset about, I don't know, I can't go for a swim or I can't go for a ride, there's someone else out there that is dealing with tragedies that it's almost like you kind of have to look on yourself and go, oh, why am I even upset?
Yeah,
because it is a luxury. And when I sometimes go, well, you know, at least I can go out. I mean, I know Pablo, for example, he can't leave at all. So he's all indoors.
No, that's right. Pablo de Pino. That's exactly right. I mean, in Spain and Italy, all of our amazing triathletes there. And you've got to think, some of these triathletes live in apartments. They don't. I think of me here at home with a backyard and a pool, et cetera. And then you think a lot of people that in France, in Italy, in Spain, they live in apartments. So that's it. There is nothing. There's no backyard. There's no pool. They're stuck inside 24/7. And I was telling you earlier before we started the podcast tonight that I think if I look at a week, 6 days of that week, I'm on top of it and I can deal with it and I'm all good. And then I have that one day a week where I have a little bit of a meltdown. But you know what? You kick yourself up the butt and you get over it, because at the end of the day, this is such a new thing for everyone. And I as much as I get shitty with my government, and I'm sure you do with yours, and you know the to and froing and like you said, the ambiguous rules, like the ambiguity of saying, okay, well, you're allowed out once a day. Well, what does that mean? For an hour, for 2 hours, can I go and train all day? And we expect our government to give us precise information, but like you said, they don't know. It's not like they've dealt with this ever before. It's a new thing. So sometimes I think we need to just take a breath and give a little bit of leeway here and just try and stay positive. And like you said, you're allowed out once a day, so I'm going to use that once a day. Thank you very much, and I'll take that, because there are some people that aren't getting out at all. So you're dead right.
Yeah, again, it's kind of the thoughts are going out to the people that are on the front lines that are having
absolutely
to deal with it every day. You know, I've got a friend who's a really, really, really good swimmer, and his dad is a doctor, and he's sleeping in the back garden in a tiny two-man tent
no
through
way
the thunderstorm that went on last night. And
Just because he doesn't want to be in the house with his family.
Yeah, because wow. because he is someone that is that's that is working crazy. On yeah. the front line with it, yeah. and he doesn't want to pass it on. And that's the kind of when I go, oh, you know, I'm a bit upset because I can't go for this or that today, mm. or oh, my race was cancelled. It's kind of like, well, you know, that guy is not only working the hours beyond any workload, but he's also then having to come home and sleep in a tent.
Yeah. Yeah, can't even spend his off time, his you know, time to relax with his family, which is yeah. crazy.
I mean, I think the one way that I'm trying to think of it at the moment is that as much as it is a tough time, it's kind of after one of the races was cancelled, I almost had a week where I was a bit like, you know, I kind of allowed myself to kind of almost sulk a little bit.
Which is fine. I think everyone's allowed some sulking time, let's be honest. I don't have anything against that, that's for sure.
Yeah, but then I use that to kind of think, well, you know, I've got all this time now. What am I going to do about it? And for quite a few people, and at least kind of the athletes at my level is that is kind of trying to build their profile within the professional side of the sport is that a lot of us are still working part time to yep. kind of fund it and to get to races. It's kind of like, well, actually, now I'm for the first time in. Kind of all my life I'm essentially a full-time athlete because I can't work and I mm. so what am I going to do with that time? And it's in one way to look at it is it's kind of exciting to explore like what would it be like to train full-time or how could I shuffle my training around, because you know if I really mess it up today I could have today totally off or I could have the next 2 days off. And you know I've always wanted to see what would happen if I did a double run day or if I rode before I swam or if I or not swimming, but if I rode before I ran or ran before I rode and how that would work. And, you know, if I find out that the DOMS are too bad or yep, I've yep. just a bit too much, you know, I can have the next couple of days off because there's no stress that I'm leading up to a race or there's no stress that there's something that's going to come in the way.
So you can definitely do some world. So you can explore what works and doesn't work, because every athlete is an individual and what works for one does not work for another. So really interesting point, Kieran, and you can see what actually works for you and your body. And if you do muck it up, it doesn't matter, does it?
Yeah, so, exactly. And it gives you that kind of freedom to try something. And if you fail, oh dear, what do we learn from it?
Did I
do that way? And then, yeah, and I think that if anything else, you know, you can look at that. And it's kind of funny that, because I'm having to do most of my, all of my swim work kind of indoors, I have braved the sea a couple of times because I'm fortunate that I can walk to the sea from the house that I'm in. But
all right, tell me one thing before you go any further. How cold is the water?
The coldest I've been in is 8.3.
Oh my god, that's ridiculous! Currently here in Noosa it's 24 degrees.
So yeah, that's insane. I have to. Wow. I wear two layers. I've been wearing two layers of gloves, socks, wetsuit, and I wear them full thermals under, like thermal leggings, thermal t-shirt under, and I can just about manage 15 minutes, but I can't do that too many times.
No, I'm not sure that's so good for your heart, but that's commitment, Kieran. Wow, that's insane.
But it's funnily enough, the indoor swimming stuff that I've been doing, and if anyone's curious of what that is, we've got a links on the challenge website that takes you to a video and a Word document, which will take you through what I'm trying to do with the swimming indoors anyway. But I've actually found that I've got stronger from doing that.
Interesting.
Because yep. I'm working with resistance as opposed yep. to the water. Now, yes, how yep. that will affect me later on in the season, you know, if racing is reinstated, then hopefully, you know, we'll see. But I'm definitely a lot stronger physically. So it'll be interesting because I've got that training stimulus that I probably wouldn't have had if I'd just maintained my swimming.
No, well, you wouldn't have done it. That's
maybe,
right.
Maybe that will be the thing that takes my swimming up to the next level.
Or
even if that strength allows me to get clear in the water quicker, you know, then I can ease off more, or if I get into a pickle, then I might be a little bit stronger. So it's kind of almost exciting to see the new training methods. And then maybe it might become the thing where people start doing a lot more indoor paddle work or indoor strength work and maybe less time in the pool. So, you know, I'm quite excited to see how I go.
Well, I've actually watched that video, and it's fantastic, by the way. For everyone out there, you should watch Kieran Linda's dry land swimming video. It's amazing. But you're dead right. Now, I've spoken to quite a few friends who are not necessarily gun swimmers like yourself, but they've been doing quite a bit of dry land swimming, and they've actually had the opportunity to go and swim in the open water. As I said here, the temperatures are still fantastic, but they have said exactly the same as you, that they just feel so much stronger. So yes, while they may lose a bit of the feel for the water, they know that once they can get some time back in the pool or in the open water again, they'll get that back, but they won't lose that strength. That strength's going to stay. So I totally agree with you, Kieran. I think, and again, it's all in mindset. If you sit there and say, oh, well, I'm screwed because I haven't been in the pool for 2 months, I'm done. Well, then, yeah, you're going to be. But if you have that attitude, well, you know what, I've been focusing on getting strong, and once I get that feel back, I know this is going to be of benefit, then I think for sure we're going to see some big moves in the swim.
Yeah, and that document was based off of the work that my girlfriend did. So when she was going for university, she had to go on placement for her physio course. And this is someone that's come from kind of a national medalist swimming background. So similar to almost what you'd say with Lucy Charles.
You're right, yep.
But she had to go on placement. So for 6-8 weeks, she would go on placement and she would maybe get one or two swims in. But most of the time it'd be no swimming. And she did this paddle work that is essentially what my training regime is based on. And she managed to maintain her swim fitness to a level of where she was going, you know, kind of 9 minutes for 800 meters.
That's crazy.
So it can be done just with very, very little swimming, and that's what it's based on. So I have full confidence that if I do maintain it will if anything limit the loss, but to be honest, I might not lose anything.
No, that's right. That's exactly right. Wow. Now I just want to ask you, obviously I've done some podcasts with some fairly well-known triathletes, so, you know, Marinda Carfrae, Tim O'Donnell, Cam Wirth, who financially right now are in a good place, even though there's no racing. Obviously, they've got some great results behind them, great sponsorships. And so financially, they're okay. I want to ask you, obviously, when I say new triathlete, a new professional triathlete to long distance racing, and I know you have sponsors, but let's be honest, you would still rely on racing and prize money as your main form of income. So what is it like for you right now, not being able to race, so no prize money, no chance of getting sponsorship bonus money? How are you coping with this current situation?
So funnily enough, I don't get any financial support from sponsorships. I only get kind of products, and at the moment, at least, my profile's not big enough where I'm really sponsored. The only company that's kind of behind me at the minute is Hoob.
Yep.
But at the moment, there's not really any financial gain from sponsors. So all of my income is dependent on racing results, and then I work as a lifeguard and a class instructor at the local sports center in my area. So that's how my income is
okay.
is divided at the minute, and I'm kind of working off of a kind of a goal that I'm just trying to break even.
Yep, absolutely.
Which is because at the minute I don't mind going for it, because this is something that I've, you know, always wanted to do, and if I don't do it, it will be, you know, it'll almost be kind of it'd be very, I'd always regret it. So I'm kind of giving it everything that I've got, and as long as I'm not kind of dragging anyone else down with me, I'm quite, you know, happy with that. At the moment, I'm trying to get some finalize on some of my coaching qualifications to potentially start doing some online coaching work with people that might be interested. So that's another area that I'm looking into. I guess one of the fortunate or unfortunate is I'm very lucky that I'm with my girlfriend's I live with my girlfriend's in my girlfriend's house with her parents. And also my parents as well would kind of let me live at home. So I'm lucky in the sense that I don't have these massive bills over the top of me. That's one benefit that I have, is that I don't have huge outgoings. Most of the outgoings are travel and components and parts, which I can pretty much break even with race results and the income that I get from my work.
Wow. I mean, it just shows it's a tough world out there. And I mean, you're lucky you are still young. So, you know, you're up and coming, but I feel for a lot of pro triathletes, and obviously my job is pro liaison. So I deal with an array of professional triathletes from the best in the world right down to ones that are just scraping by. And when I first heard that there could be a chance that there will be no races this year, it broke my heart, because I just thought, well, what are these triathletes going to do? But you know what? The greatest thing about triathletes is that they're stayers. So I think, like yourself, you're going to think outside the box and you're going to do everything you can to get through this, to ride the wave, however long this wave may be. I mean, there is talk that we will get races back right towards the end of the year. I am still holding hope of that, but none of us can be really sure. It's a really tricky situation, and I just feel for so many pro athletes out there right now that do rely solely on prize money. And I mean, there's just no prize money to be made right now. Moving on, I've never asked you this, even though I've known you now since our meet last year. Do you prefer, obviously, do you have a coach, first of all? Do you actually have a coach, or do you coach yourself?
Currently I'm coaching myself, but I've got help from people that I've worked with in the past. So I've got coaches looking in and saying like, oh, this would be good to do this session, and that would be good to do that session, and then I kind of put it all together in my plan, and then I'll go back to them and say, this is the layout that I'm trying, and what do you think? And I'm quite lucky to work with people that are very good in their own fields, but they always act as if you know their opinion could be wrong or needed to be changed or ready to learn. And it's quite a nice environment where I will say, well, this is what I think, what do you think? And they'll say, well, from my experience, I think we need to do this, and then we put it together and then see if that happens, and then when if something works, keep it in, try something new. I've been in the past where I've kind of made the mistake of almost getting too comfortable with the training layout, and kind of just repeating the same thing and the same thing and the same thing, and that's one thing that I'm trying to change at the minute, is not trying new things just to see what works and build up profile from there.
And what about training partners? Are you a solo trainer, or you prefer to train with people?
I love to train with people, but being from a background of swimming at swimming clubs, riding with a riding club and running with a running club, I've kind of always had to kind of put it all together anyway. Yeah. And part of that means that I'm quite happy to do things on my own. To be honest, it's there's not a lot of people that do the longer side of triathlon to the level that, or maybe not the level, but like when I go out and say, well, I'm going to do a 6-7 hour ride.
You don't get too many takers.
Yeah. Yeah. So sometimes what I try and do is I try and do a little bit before and meet up with people, and then a little bit after. But I think one of the things that I think is quite vital to it is almost trying to do some of that stuff on your own. remember the biggest training day that I did was I swam in the morning and I did a 6.5 hour ride and then ran off that. And I did that all on my own with no music, nothing like that. And it's not maybe fun. You maybe go from the, you know, training's fun to this is more of a job. But in races you don't get that. So it's kind of you kind of practicing yourself. Sometimes in the past I've got too reliant on listening to music, and when you take that away, then I go through the kind of the peaks and troughs a lot more than when I have music maybe that's cheering me on. Yeah.
Oh no, I'm hearing you. I mean, even when I do long runs now, and a long run for me, by the way, is like 15, 16 kilometers. We're nothing crazy. But if I try to do that without any music, it's amazing the difference it makes. So I hear you loud and clear on that one. And now recently you became an official Challenge Family Ambassador. Talk to me a little bit about that. And also, what are your short-term and long-term goals moving forward? Obviously, there are no short-term goals. Well, excuse me, there are no long-term goals at the moment because we don't know when this is going to end. But let's just say short-term goals for now, obviously just getting through this crazy period, but then looking forward to 2021, what are some goals for you personally that you would like to meet?
I think the short-term goal is I just really want to learn more and more as much as I can. I've been very fortunate to meet some great people within the sport, and I'm just trying to learn as much as I can. And maybe a long-term goal is getting to the point where I can almost become a pure full-time athlete in terms of in terms of income. Now, what that will look like, I'm not too sure, but that's kind of a goal that I have in the back of my mind. I want to return to Almere. I just had such a good time at that race. Just constant support all the way around. In the run course, just the locals flooded out to the course and cheered everyone on, and it was just such a great experience. I think every person that I met on the bike ride said, you know, well done, keep it going.
Yeah, and of course,
and it was just lovely to be a part of all of that.
So does that mean that you actually want to do another full distance reasonably soon, or are you going to keep to middle distance?
No, this is the I guess one of the bigger questions is,
yes, exactly,
because I personally love, I mean, I've only done one, so I can't maybe it's I did one and it went well, and I loved every minute. Well, maybe not every minute of it, but I loved the experience. I loved the challenge, and so I had a good experience with that. And I think I've always known that the longer that I go, I think the more that I enjoy it, and I just really like that challenge of really trying to see how far you can go. So I want to do long course, but I think that's one of the reasons that almost with the Challenge Ambassador role is I've had people from Challenge, you know, sit down with me and actually kind of pasta parties and things, and I've had good conversations with organizers and they've said, you know, what are your plans, and you know, this is what's happened in the past when people have stayed long and this is what happened if they've done short. And you know, I've had race organizers that wanted me to be there or you know, to make the swim a little bit more exciting, or aspects like that, actually sit down with me and say, like, what are your interests, and this is what I think, because we genuinely care about your health and your ability
and your future. That's right.
And I think that's one of the reasons that I'm on the Challenger Ambassador program, is that I just, when I've come to these events, everyone's just been so supportive, and I've come from I've come from backgrounds where people pretend they care, and as soon as you're not doing great, they'll kind of look the other way. And I was actually very surprised when I first started racing the events, was that I was having people come over and say, do you know what, as much as it benefits us, I don't think that you should do this because of this reason. And Yeah. If you ever need to talk to me, you need to do this. And we've got people, you know, you can talk to this person, that person. And then just the community behind the events. I mean, I've sat down in pasta parties with, you know, just the most random people, and you learn so much about them. And actually, you know, I remember sitting down talking to someone about, we were just sitting down in one of the pasta parties, and we were talking about food intake, and just learning things from them, and nutrition, and I think that's the thing that I kind of fell in love with the events, is just the sense of community, and everyone there is, you know, even when I got in the way of some of the pro athletes on the bike, you know, oh, on your left, and I said, oh, I'm really sorry, I didn't realize you were there, and they were like, no, don't worry about it, it's a long race. yeah. They said great swim, try and hang on the back if you can. It's kind of like that is what it's all about, and understanding that as much as people are my competitors, just to finish the event is enough.
Yeah, and, no, I agree. I know. And of course, this year with Challenge Almere, it's the ITU Multisport Championship. So I won't lie, I am secretly praying, and I know I'm getting a bit ahead of myself, but it's not till September, and I'm just hoping that the world's sorted itself out by then, because I would love nothing more than to be at that race. I'm not saying that I'd love to see, well, I would love to see you there. There are many events, Kieran, not just the long distance race, many events that whole week. But yeah, I mean, obviously we love to have you there because you're just such a great person, and you do make the race exciting because you're like that little carrot that we get to dangle out there for quite a long time. But yeah, at 23 years of age, you know, if I'm to be Mama Belinda, you know, you've definitely got a great career in middle distance racing right now, and plenty of time to get into full distance racing. But I'm never one of those people to say, well, no, you just shouldn't do it. You've still got to do what you feel is right for you. I'm like you. I think get as much advice as you can from people that have been there, done that, and particularly when they've made a career of it. Of course, it's great to get advice, but I would never tell someone, no, you shouldn't do it. I think that's the decision that you need to make, and you are obviously wise beyond your 23 young years, so I would never tell you what you should or shouldn't do. But yeah, definitely you've got many, many years to start really focusing on full distance racing.
Yeah, and that's one of the, because when I did the Ironman, I didn't realize how much it affected my body, not just I would after kind of the first couple of weeks, I'd just feel really, really good, and I would go, do you know what, I'm going to go for an easy run or an easy ride or whatever it would be, and then I'd realize within, you know, 5-10 minutes of doing it that then I couldn't physically run, and I'd be walking. And that was something that I was a bit ambitious, and I did Mallorca kind of 4 weeks after the Ironman, and I realized very quickly that was just not, I went to the race and I you know, I was okay, but it just, I wasn't myself.
Difficult to get out of second gear. Yeah.
And everything was kind of just a bit restricted. And I guess the thing about the Ironman is to get ready for it, you have to get into such a strong physical point of mind.
Yeah.
To be able to undergo that challenge, and that takes a lot out of you, and it also means that you kind of are prioritizing your year around maybe one race or a couple of races. So I mean, I do enjoy the 70.3. I do really enjoy it. But I think the Ironman is something, especially in the future, that I'd really like to target. But I do agree, at the moment, being the age I am, and definitely being at the point where I need to essentially learn from as many races as I can. I think predominantly I will be sticking to 70.3, and I might look at maybe doing one Ironman a year, or maybe one every 2 years, or I might just wait until time. But like you said, there's a lot of people out there that have experience, and not only just, you know, in one or two race years, but have made a whole career out of it, that I am really, you know, fortunate I've been able to talk to, and trying to make those decisions for you know, the future investment of the sport.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, obviously longevity, and at 23 years of age, particularly with long distance racing, you're still a pup. And when I look at the likes of Craig Alexander or Cam Brown, who are two great examples, Didi Griesbauer, you know, these athletes are well into their 40s and they are still kicking butt. So they've obviously done the right thing, and they've raced a lot of long distance, like full distance events, but whatever they're doing, they're doing it properly because their bodies are still behaving for them. And I think, yeah, it's just a matter of really listening to your body. And sometimes as youngsters, we tend to think that we can get away with a lot of stuff that we can't. Eventually it catches up with you. So even though at 22, 23, 24, you think you're okay, it's when you hit 30, 31 that you realize, you know what, I should have actually listened to my body a little bit more. And yeah, we want you in the sport for a long time, because that's one of the greatest things about the sport of triathlon. If you look at any other elite sport around the world, triathlon, you can have this amazing career that you start in your early to mid 20s and you can be going. I mean, Cam Brown is 47, I think, and still having incredible races. So if you want it. So, and I love that. I freaking love that about our sport. It's not this, you don't have this very short shelf life. If you look after yourself and you do the right things and you still have the passion and the love, then it can be a 20 plus year career for you, which is insane when you think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that is the beauty of the sport, and that's why you can have people that are very, very young on the same start line as some people that maybe have done it for years.
Yeah.
And it is lovely to have that community. And I think the nice thing about doing three disciplines is that, you know, you might wake up on a day and think, oh, do you know what? I just don't think running is going to be a good idea for me today.
Rather than going for a run,
I'll do my swim session, or I'll go for an easy ride. And I think that's the nice thing about triathlon, where, because if you're anything like me, when I miss a session, I can get really kind of agitated. I can actually get quite maybe not myself, put it that way.
I think that's definitely a personality trait of pretty much every triathlete I know.
Yeah.
So I understand.
But that ability to compromise and just go, well, I can't do that, but I'm going to do that instead. It's a lot easier to be able to say, do you know what, actually today I might not be as good as I, or as strong, or as able to do this as I thought I would, but do you know what, that's fine. I found that's the level, and instead today I'm going to go for an easy swim or an easy ride. And yeah, I think that's quite beautiful about the sport.
It certainly is. I mean, and as I said, I've been retired now for, I think, 6-7 years, and I don't swim, bike and run every day, but I still do a little bit of each. Just I like to say I keep my foot in the door. And I'm the same as you. Some days when I head out for an easy run, because that's all I do these days, I'm just not feeling it. So I don't push it. I'll turn around and I'll do something else. And I think that's the beauty of having a sport that where we have three disciplines, is that you can always pick and choose and you can always do something.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, and even the freedom that it can give you. I mean, maybe not now, but
that's true. Yeah.
You know, just being able to go, do you know what, I wonder what's over there, or I'm going to ride to this place today. Or, and that was one of the cool things when I was a little bit younger, was not being able to drive, but being able to get to places on bike if I needed to.
Yes, exactly. If you wanted to. But that's an interesting point you've just brought up, Kieran, because I often think, in the current set of circumstances that we find ourselves in, if I wasn't into training, so if I wasn't an athlete, and I don't know what I'd be doing with myself right now. I think for all those human beings that are on our planet that do not do some form of training, and I know that's been probably one of the greatest things that's come out of this shitty situation, is that, and I'm sure you've noticed it back home as well, we certainly have it here in Australia, so many more people are out training and exercising who normally would not be, because I think, well, if I didn't train, I don't know what I'd do all day. It's crazy. So, yeah, I think, and I know that a lot of people have taken up, I mean, the amount of walkers we have outdoors. We took the dogs to the beach this afternoon here, and the amount of people walking on the beach is, it's at least 5 times what they would normally be, all keeping social distancing, etc. But they're just out there because that's all they're allowed to do at the moment. So it's interesting that sport continues even to this day. Even though I've been retired for that many years, sport continues and exercise continues to bring me so much.
Yeah, there are a lot of people in the have kind of picked up the exercise because they have time, and that's one of the things why I always respect the age group athletes, is that that, you know, I train and work part time, but do you know what? I don't understand how people can work a full day of shift and then go home and I've worked full time through work experience, and only for very short periods of time, but I would do that and then get home and go, I can't
train now. Exactly.
I think almost some of the age groupers, especially the ones that have kind of picked up later in their life, is it's kind of like, yeah, how impressive is that, that you can do a full day of work and then train? And I think people that are maybe not as you know, able to do that have been given the opportunity to, you know, experience being active. And I just hope that because they're doing it now, because they have the time, that they almost find a bit of a love to it.
Yep, I agree.
And that would be beautiful to see, and that would actually be a positive that maybe people could take out of the situation.
And let's agree. I mean, if we can wallow in self-pity, as we said before, about this circumstance right now, but yeah, if we can take just one positive away from this horrible, you know, time in life, that would be amazing. Because at the end of the day, if we can get more people in this world fit and healthy, well, you know, down the track, if and when the next one comes, it's going to be better for us, you know. So I agree with you there.
Yeah, it's and maybe that's a very, very small positive to the situation. But do you know what? If that makes, you know, people around the world, you know, in general, a little bit more healthy, or even that they find more of an active lifestyle, it's, you know, that is a brilliant thing. And maybe you might even see them try a triathlon, which would be even better, and join the community that's around that. It takes to change a habit, it takes a lot of effort, but once it's there, it's there.
And that's a
positive thing. And I see a lot of people making the effort, doing things online for other people, and I do feel like it's almost, sometimes when the whole world is going through a tragedy, it brings out the best in people. And I've never seen, so in this country we're under the NHS, and I think for a long time people have kind of overlooked or maybe questioned the NHS, and I think when you get into a traumatic situation, you actually remember how good the medical service is and how much we depend and rely.
Yeah, I totally agree, Kieran. Totally agree.
And I hope that it kind of stays ingrained in people's mind that, you know, when you bring up these issues, maybe in a political debate or when you vote or anything like that, that you actually remember that these services are here for a reason and that they are very, very important.
No, I totally agree. And even just the mere fact of not taking anything for granted anymore, just the simple things in life that we just expect and don't even think about. Now, all of a sudden, it's like, well, you know what? I'm not going to take this for granted anymore. I'm a lucky person. So totally agree with you.
Yeah, that's good. And I sometimes say, especially like at the end of the season, maybe when I'm a bit more run down and I've almost kind of got to the point where the traveling is taking its toll.
It sounds just like me.
Yeah. and the organizing and all that stuff, you kind of go, oh, you know, why am I doing it? And you know, this is so much effort, and what could I be doing? Or I really wish I could do that. And it's funny because it takes maybe three or four days at the end of the season to have off and then go, do you know what? Actually, that's everything that I want to be doing.
I'm itching to get out there again. Do you know, that is my life in a nutshell. I start off at the beginning of the year, clean as beans to get to events, work events. Middle of the year, it's like, oh, yeah, another event, you know, it's okay. Once I'm there, I'm okay. By the end of the year, I'm like, I don't want to leave. I don't want to go. But now that I actually can't go and I haven't been able to work event, well, relatively, I got to go to Challenge Wanaka and I got to work at Mooloolaba. But other than that, and now I'm just thinking I am never going to whinge and moan about having to get on an aeroplane again and travel to an event. And you're dead right. I'm just not going to take it for granted anymore. I'm a lucky person that I actually get to do that. So
yeah.
Next time, if you ever, I give you permission, if you ever hear me whinging about flying overseas again to Europe or to the States, I want you get permission to say, hey, listen, I remember that phone call we had.
Well, I think your some of your flight history is maybe been a little bit more extreme than the others.
True.
I remember your 1,000 flights to get to Daytona.
Oh, to Daytona. That was, I mean, that was insane. It was at the US. I'm thinking, oh, surely it can't be that bad. I just, you know, I fly to LA and then I'll be there. But, you know, it was another two or three flights from LA. And I'm like, how big is this country? I keep forgetting how big the States actually is. And it's huge. But, yeah, that was worth the travel. That's for sure. That race was
The funny thing with that was that I was ready to whinge about my 9-hour flight. And then I found out that other people had been for a day. So I kind of very quickly quieted them down.
No, I won't say anything. Oh, it's funny, but yeah, you know, you whinge and moan, but one good night's sleep and you're ready to roll. So that's the main thing. And I am crossing my fingers so tight that Challenge Daytona takes place this year. I mean, it's the one race that, you know, even though I know the States is in a terrible way right now, having a race December, you know, it's like that is it. If we can't have a race in December, then we ain't having a race all year.
Yeah.
So it's like, surely we can get this one race in December. And I know that if we can, if it is possible, it's going to be phenomenal. That's for sure.
Yeah, that race is still it was almost like a dream, because you don't expect to, like, even with some of the really, really famous races that they say it's amazing, usually it's the crowd or it's the scenery, or, but that race was just, it was something else in terms of to be racing on that, around that circuit was just, you know, I couldn't believe that I was there. And I remember coming back home and almost not knowing what to do with myself, because it was like I'd just woken up. Yes. And I didn't know what was going on.
Did that happen? Hey, yeah. Listen, I've been to many events and I felt the same way. So yeah, they're a truly incredible team over there in Challenge Daytona. That's for sure. They know how to look after the athletes.
Yeah, and I can't believe how close everyone was, because we were in the middle of a circuit. You essentially had age groupers, race staff, professional athletes, just all in one area, and it was really funny to just see people, you know, talking to technical staff and finding out about them, and then 1 minute, then you're racing around the track in a NASCAR, and then oh, look over here, you've got Lionel and Lucy just, you know, walking about, having
hanging
a look
out,
at the place.
Hanging out, as they do. That's right. Yeah.
And it was funny when we were just kind of walking to our briefing, and you had all the pro athletes together, and, you know, we were just walking by, you know, just friends and family of other athletes, and we almost became just one big huddle, and everyone was just talking to each other, and that was really nice to see. There was no barriers or restricted zones. It was just everyone in an area, which was really, really good to see.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So fingers crossed that that is the one race that I am honestly hoping does take place this year. And I know that the team there are working very hard, but yeah, that would be awesome. It'd be an amazing way to finish the year, that's for sure.
Oh, 100%.
Well, listen, Kieran, I will not leave you. I will not I will not hold you on any longer. You've been absolutely amazing. You are wise beyond your years, that's for sure. It's such a pleasure talking to you. I know you've probably got some training set for today. It's only still fairly early on Saturday morning.
Yeah, it's coming up to 10 o'clock. So
10 o'clock.
Yeah, I've got a big ride to do indoors looking at a wall.
Of course.
Yeah, no, got a ride to do, and then I'll go for a run later, and then probably finish the day off by doing some indoor swimming courts.
Awesome! That sounds like
yeah, it'd be nice. Very productive. It'd be nice day.
Perfect.
Yeah, it's
perfect.
And you're going off to bed.
It's a perfect day considering the circumstances that we are all faced in at the moment.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. Well, listen, can't wait to talk to you again, but thank you so much for your time tonight. It's been a pleasure. See you later.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks, darling. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Coffee Calls with Belinda. I really hope you enjoyed listening. If you'd like to continue listening and stay updated on our latest podcasts, then please subscribe. It would also be great if you could rate our podcast and leave us a review. If you have any specific questions you'd like me to ask the athletes, then please send through to the following email address, podcast@challenge-family.com. The making of these podcasts would not be possible without the wonderful help of our great partners, Powerbar, Otso, Zone 3, Lubos Bilic at LB Training, Sport No Limit Group, and VeloSoc. But for now, thanks so much for listening, and I'll be back soon for another coffee.